Trend number three, China's great rebalancing continues. As we've explained in previous issues of Trends, China will be forced to radically transform itself if it hopes to become more affluent. The problem is that household consumption accounts for only around 38% of China's gross domestic product. To put this in perspective, Chinese household consumption as a share of GDP is barely half that of the United States, where it typically accounts for about 70% of economic activity. It's also well below the prevailing rate of roughly 60% for other large economies in recent years, such as Brazil, France, Germany, and India. An economy can only grow so big and so affluent by relying on exports and capital investments. Now that the country's investment-led model is reaching its limits, consumers have to begin picking up the economy's slack if China is to sustain its economic growth. As highlighted in a recent report by McKinsey & Company, the country's leadership has already taken some tentative steps toward shifting China to an economy centered on household consumption. For example, earlier this year, Beijing released a plan to raise the dividend payouts of state-owned enterprises and to use a portion of the distribution to strengthen social security funds. The plan still requires approval, but its disclosure suggests that there is a realistic possibility it will be implemented and help to curb the investment appetite of state-owned companies while shifting wealth to Chinese households. So far, the signs are encouraging that the new leadership is serious about changing China's growth model, and this is reason enough for global firms that have benefited from China's investment boom to rethink their strategies for the years ahead. The most obvious consequence of rebalancing is that it will result in much slower growth over the medium term. An increasing number of economists now project that average annual economic growth will fall to between 5 and 7% a year during the next decade. However, Michael Pettis, a finance professor at Peking University's Guanghua School of Management, argues that it may slow to 3 or 4% a year. Pettis notes that in modern history, no country that has experienced an investment-driven growth miracle has avoided a slowdown, and it is hard to find good reasons to think China will be an exception. At the heart of this rebalancing dynamic lies the explosive ongoing growth of China's emerging middle class. According to McKinsey research, by 2022, more than 75% of China's urban consumers will earn the equivalent of $9,000 to $34,000 a year. In purchasing power parity terms, that range is between the average income of Brazil and Italy. Just 4% of urban Chinese households were within that range in 2000, but 68% were there in 2012. Beneath the top-line figures are significant shifts in consumption dynamics, which McKinsey has been tracking since 2005, using a combination of questionnaires and in-depth interviews to create a detailed portrait by income level, age profile, geographic location, and shopping behavior. Their latest research suggests that within the burgeoning middle class, the upper middle class is poised to become the principal engine of consumer spending over the next decade. As that happens, a new, more globally minded generation of Chinese will exercise disproportionate influence in the market. Middle class growth will be stronger in smaller inland cities than in the urban strongholds of the eastern seaboard, and the internet's consumer impact will continue to expand. Already, 68% of the middle class has access to it, compared with 57% of the total urban population. The evolution of the middle class means that sophisticated and seasoned shoppers, those able and willing to pay a premium for quality and to consider discretionary goods and not just basic necessities, will soon emerge as the dominant force. For the sake of simplicity, McKinsey calls consumers with annual household incomes in the 106,000 to 229,000 renminbi range upper middle class. In 2012, this segment, accounting for just 14% of urban households, was dwarfed by the so-called mass middle class, with household incomes from 60,000 to 106,000 renminbi. But by 2022, McKinsey estimates that the upper middle class will account for 54% of urban households and 56% of urban private consumption, while the mass middle will dwindle to 22% of urban households. The behavior of today's upper middle class provides some clues to China's future. Research indicates that these consumers are far more likely to buy laptops, digital cameras, and specialized household items such as laundry fabric softeners. Along with affluent and ultra-wealthy consumers, upper-middle-class ones are stimulating rapid growth in luxury goods consumption, which has surged at rates of 16 to 20% per annum for the past 4 years. By 2015, barring unforeseen events, more than one-third of the money spent around the world on high-end bags, shoes, watches, jewelry, and ready-to-wear clothing will come from Chinese consumers in the domestic market or outside the mainland. Beijing's new leaders understand that they must urgently rebalance China's economy. They also know that this will change the sources of Chinese demand dramatically and may involve significant direct transfers from the state to the household sector through measures such as privatization, land grants, and the elimination of residency requirements. These changes will be driven by how China decides to balance the costs and benefits between powerful vested interests and the needs of the economy. It's too early to say exactly how this will occur, but there is no question that it will drive or retard growth in many industries around the world. Given this trend, we offer the following forecasts for your consideration. First, through 2030, continued strong growth in the size and diversity of China's middle class will create new market opportunities for companies that adapt to the new realities. However, strategies that succeeded in the past, like focusing on the wide distribution of standardized products for mass consumers, will need to be adjusted in a new environment with millions of Chinese trading up and becoming more selective in their tastes. A detailed understanding of what consumers are doing, how their preferences are evolving, and the underlying reasons for their behavior will be needed. The most successful companies can begin tailoring their product portfolios to the needs of increasingly sophisticated consumers and revising brand architectures to differentiate offerings and attract younger consumers eager for fresh buying experiences. Second, whether this rebalancing succeeds will depend on the ability of the government to manage conflicting priorities. If consumption is to grow enough as a source of demand to replace investment as a share of GDP, Beijing must reverse policies, such as keeping the currency undervalued and depressing interest rates. For the past 3 decades, these policies have subsidized investment and constrained the growth of household income. That means not giving in to powerful groups, sectors, and companies that have benefited so much from China's investment-intensive growth model, including artificially cheap credit. This will help private businesses in China and around the world to thrive, while so-called state-owned enterprises will be forced to make wrenching changes. Third, over the next 5 years, China's rebalancing will cause the price of hard commodities to drop. China consumes a disproportionate share of the world's aluminum, copper, and iron ore. Adjusted for GDP, the country buys 4 to 10 times as much of these commodities as the rest of the world does, and its appetite has driven most of the global increase in commodity demand during the past 2 decades. That demand is a direct consequence of the country's growth through investment approach. As investment growth slows, so will China's demand for hard commodities, whose prices may consequently drop, perhaps by as much as 50%, over the next few years. This will benefit countries that import hard commodities and companies where they are an important cost component. However, not all commodity prices will drop. If rebalancing succeeds, the income of China's middle and lower middle classes should grow, keeping demand for food strong. Fourth, over the short term, industries that profit from building infrastructure or manufacturing capacity will suffer. As Michael Pettis observes, rebalancing will sharply reduce the growth of aggregate spending on construction equipment, heavy manufacturing, transportation, and other sectors that have historically benefited from China's explosive surge in investment. Fifth, consumer goods companies will be the big beneficiaries of China's rebalancing. Rebalancing requires that household incomes continue to grow faster than overall GDP. We're likely to see the composition of that growing consumption change dramatically. And this growth could take many forms, benefiting different sets of households and providers of different kinds of consumer goods. Sixth, other countries, especially developing ones that rely heavily for growth on manufacturing, will benefit. Low unit labor costs, repressed interest rates, and an undervalued currency are at the heart of China's export competitiveness. By definition, rebalancing increases all of these and will significantly reduce China's export competitiveness, at least in the near term. This development has already benefited low-cost producers in countries such as Mexico, whose manufacturing sector was nearly decimated until recently by aggressively priced Chinese manufacturing exports. And seventh, within 10 years, China's buying power will be far more widely distributed than in the past. In 2002, 40% of China's relatively small urban middle class lived in four Tier 1 cities, Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, and Shenzhen. By 2022, the proportion of the upper middle class living in those megacities will probably fall to about 16%. Those won't be shrinking, but middle class growth rates will be far greater in the smaller Tier 3 cities of the North and West. Tier 3 should be home to more than 30% of China's upper middle class households by 2022, compared with 15% in 2002.